I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The acclaimed filmmaker Deepa Mehta joins me again. Her new film, Midnight's Children, has played at the film festivals in Toronto and Vancouver and opens nationwide on the 2nd of November 2012. It's based on the three-time Booker Prize-winning novel by Salman Rushdie, who adapted his own book and wrote the screenplay. Mr. Rushdie also narrates the film. When India declares its independence at the stroke of midnight on the 15th of August 1947, two children are born. One's the son of a wealthy couple, and the other is the illegitimate son of an impoverished street singer. They are switched at birth, and the film chronicles their lives as written by fate. We see them at the forefront of India's history from the years 1947 to 1977. As well, the film opens in 1917, and we see India depicted in those 60 years through 127 speaking parts and 64 locations. I saw the movie yesterday, and it was extraordinary, moving, and compelling. Its sweep of history is staggering, and the performances from the actors are first rate. We'll talk to Ms. Mehta about getting this film made, what it meant to her, and what she hopes the viewer will get out of this movie. Deepa Mehta has directed the films Bollywood, Hollywood, Sam and Me, Fire, Earth, and Heaven on Earth, which she was last on the program to discuss. She has won countless awards, and her film Water was nominated for an Academy Award. I speak to Deepa Mehta in late September, just as the film is set to open the Vancouver International Film Festival. Please welcome back to the Planta Online program, Deepa Mehta. Ms. Mehta, good morning.
Good morning, Joseph. Nice to be back.
Thanks for joining us. So, as I told you before we started, I really thought this movie was outstanding. This is your biggest movie yet, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Biggest in the amount of days it took to make it, and biggest in time, in terms of the cast. My God, we had a cast of millions.
Right.
And lots of cobras and animals. And
I was going to ask about that, because in the movie there are great shots and great images of even ants, cockroaches. Those snakes, those were real poisonous snakes?
Yes, everything. They were cobras. No, the venom had been taken out.
Oh, okay.
But they were still really scary.
Yeah.
You know, when a cobra hisses, and full-grown ones, I mean, regardless of the fact that the, you know, the trainer is telling you, don't worry about it, there's no venom. I mean, you feel, supposing there's a little bit left, you know. So it was all very harrowing. And and Picture Singh, of course, who plays the snake charmer and is the most charming man on the earth, says that was terrified. The actor was terrified of snakes, so you can imagine what that was like.
Yeah, there's some scenes where he's quite close to them. I guess there's like four or five. And
yes, I know.
Yeah. I guess you read the book when it first came out, I guess, in the early 80s, right?
That's right.
Yeah. After reading it, did you want to make a movie of it?
No. I mean, I remember reading it, I think it was 1982, and I was in Delhi, and I read it. And even though the book was extremely cinematic, I mean, I was making documentaries at that time, and I wouldn't even have dreamt of anything so, even attempting to do something like this. And it never crossed my mind. But what did cross my mind was that, my God, you know, that Salman Rushdie really knows and loves cinema, because the book is extremely cinematic.
Yeah, and so it took some years after that, you wanted to make the movie. You just approached him and said, who has the rights? And he gave them to you for a dollar, right?
That's right. I mean, you know, we became friends during during Water. In fact, when we first screened my film Water in New York, he was there. And that's the first time I'd met him. And I remember being sort of slightly concerned that the most iconic writer, at least the one I admired the most, was in the screening room. And luckily, he liked the film a lot. So, and he wrote, he gave a quote for it, and that's how we became friends. And then, you know, 5 years later, we were sitting in Toronto, and I asked him that who had the rights for Midnight's Children, and he said he did. And I said, how would you consider giving them to us, to David Hamilton, who's the producer, and myself? And he said, done. And he did.
Yeah. And then when was it that you got him to do the adaptation, the screenplay?
Well, we talked about it very soon afterwards. And, you know, he really wanted me to write it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that it was really important that he wrote it. And he didn't want to. He really didn't want to write it for many reasons, you know, why he said he'd done it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't want to revisit it. But I felt I convinced him, and it was a compelling enough reason that that he could be, the way he could have that distance, and in fact, even like he himself says, healthy disrespect for his own work, it would be very difficult for another screenwriter to do that. So he was just the ideal person to do it.
And as a director, was it a great challenge because there are so many characters?
No. You know, what we did, Joseph, was that before starting on the screenplay, before he wrote it, I felt that it was very important that we get on this, to find out where we were, what our visions were, respective visions were for the film. So I asked him to write in point form how he thought that the narrative of the film should flow. And I said I would do the same. And about 2 weeks later, we came back, we met, and we exchanged our pieces of paper. And it turned out that they were almost identical. So our visions for the film were very similar. So once that was done, that became the blueprint of what the film would be like. And, you know, yes, I think Salman is the first one to say that, the film is not, doesn't have all the characters, all the, all the phases in the, mm-hmm. as the book does, because then the film would be about like 8 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we chose to keep was I think was the essence or the emotional center of the book, which is the journey of a young man who comes of age and who is born at the stroke of midnight in India, and how his journey, his personal journey, his emotional journey is, his search for home and what he means and identity is reflected in that of India.
And is that the message of the movie? I mean, other than to tell a compelling story, obviously, do you think it speaks to the audience that sees it, say, in this country or in India about its history?
I think that, we've shown it to different audiences now, and the reaction has been more or less the same. I mean, yes, it is very particular to India and India's history, but, as Buñuel, the Spanish director, said this, when he said that when you get that specific, that's the very minute you get universal. And I think that there is something, yes, the film Midnight Children is very specific to India, but it's also very universal because I think it finds resonance to anybody who is looking for a home or who has left their homeland or who has left their family and is searching for identity. And in today's world where the migratory forces are so huge, not only from country to country and borders are being blurred and from city to city even, everybody somehow identifies with Salim's longing for a home.
Rushdie has also said about this movie that it could have only been made in Canada by Canadians.
Mm-hmm.
So there is something for us Canadians too.
I think there's something huge for Canadians. I mean, I'm a Canadian,
yeah.
And a proud Canadian to that. And I feel that it has that quality that is very, for me, very Canadian, which is reflective by nature, and it's not so quick to judge. And I think those are such strong qualities that compromise a Canadian character. And I mean, I don't think that I thought about it, and it was done in a thought out way. But I think it was very instinctive.
Now, you mentioned you're a Canadian, and you're one of our finest filmmakers and our preeminent citizens. You're also described as a transnational artist. When you go to India, say, did you feel at home there as well?
Very much.
Yeah.
I mean, the minute I step out of the plane in India, I feel equally at home in India. But I think that as I grow older, I realize that, in fact, it's through Midnight's Children, the process of making it, that I have I've really come to terms with the fact that that if I embrace Canada as my home now, in no way is it a rejection of my love for India, but I feel I don't have to straddle both the worlds anymore,
yeah.
And finally I'm at peace, and it makes me feel really good about India and Canada to make that commitment and to make that choice, you know.
Yeah, there's a scene in the movie. It's in the hospital where when the babies are switched.
Yeah.
And I noticed on the board, I guess they put down the last names of all the children that are born, and I noticed that your name was on there. Are you a Midnight's child too?
No, I'm not.
No.
And I didn't even know they'd done it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the art department had done it as a joke.
Yeah. There are little things like that I noticed after watching the movie yesterday.
That's interesting that you would see something like that, because I didn't even realize till I was editing it, and I said, is there a way we can get rid of it? and we couldn't, so there you go.
Yeah, and then there's another scene in the beginning of the movie, and I forget the guy, I had it written down, and I forget the guy who was the imam on Little Mosque on the Prairie.
Yes.
When he's in the, he's hiding in the house downstairs.
Yes.
I noticed that there was a picture of the Mona Lisa.
Yes.
On the wall. And
yes.
Then later on in the movie, when Salim is in prison, the Mona Lisa is again in his cell.
My God, are you observant or what? I have to tell the production designer this, who's going to be thrilled.
So you had no idea that was there?
No, but the production design, I mean, and this film is like impeccably designed,
yeah.
I feel. And I mean, and everybody says that, is saw the Mona Lisa in the prison. That we actually filmed in a real prison,
mm-hmm.
in Sri Lanka, and it just blew him away seeing this little picture of Mona Lisa, and he felt that, you know, this, and he asked the prisoner why he had cut it out of a magazine out of all the film stars that are available in all the magazines, and stuck the Mona Lisa, and he was told, in fact, by the prisoner that because it was elusive and he didn't know where she came from.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know that it was Italian, or he didn't know anything about Da Vinci or nothing. And so that became, that elusive quality became something that Dilip actually, used for even for Nadir, you know.
The production designer, that's your brother, right?
Yes, he's my brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just visually, as well as the story, the acting and all that, visually it's just a really great movie to watch on screen. You feel like you're in those places, you know, you feel like you're in the prison, you feel like it's a dark out, you know, during the emergency, etc. In terms of casting this movie, you have actors that are well known in this country, as well as actors that are pretty well known in India. How do you get a company like that together? I mean, does it take a lot of time to get, say, the actors that you want?
Once the script was ready, I had a short list of who I thought would be the right actors for the characters. So I had like five for each who I thought, you know, in terms of gradation, who I thought would be right, who I felt would be interesting and would do the roles justice. So I went, went very systematically. David Hamilton, who's a producer, is amazing, and realizes the importance of casting, especially, I mean, casting is really important,
yeah.
always, but especially when you're doing an ensemble piece, everybody has to be just right. And so we went through the whole process where we met lots of actors from here, from the States, from England, from India, and then chose the ones who just were not only right for the characters, but who were totally committed and passionate about the work.
The guy that that owns the house, the British fellow, Charles Dance.
Yes,
he's played
yes.
by Charles Dance.
Yes.
He's a well-known director, isn't he?
He did a film as well. I think he's done a couple of films.
Yeah.
And what a joy he was to work with.
It's just, he I kind of wish that he was in the movie longer. But
me
I guess,
too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
No, I mean, there are many characters that I wish were in the movie longer. But that's a good thing to have, I think, better than wanting them not to be there for that long.
Yeah, in the book, Rushdie talks about the memories he had growing up of this chutney that he ate as a child.
Mm-hmm.
In the movie as well, that's in the movie. In the press material that your distributor put out, there's a recipe for green chutney that's your mother's.
That's right.
Yeah.
It is my mother's, yes.
And that was served on set, was it?
Yes, it was. It was made by the cook that we had from India, who actually made the green chutney. So it was, the chutney was in all the scenes for little Salim as well as the older Salim.
Yeah.
And then towards the end, it was always there.
Has Rushdie ever tried it?
I don't know if he's tried. I think he has.
Yeah.
I think that he came to Toronto and and we had we were trying out different recipes of the chutney, and I think he tried them out, and he really liked my mom's, and that's why that ended up by being the one.
Yeah.
And you know.
Is he a good cook?
Who?
Salman Rushdie.
I don't know.
You've never had his food?
No.
Yeah.
But he loves food.
Yeah.
He loves food.
It comes across in the movie. Yeah. That's something that was important to him growing up.
Yes, I think, you know, the whole thing with chutney and the green chutney and the aroma of it, and there was a lot of food on set. There were a lot of animals on set, like I said, but there was also a lot of food.
Yeah. Now, there were some challenges making the movie. I guess in Sri Lanka there was a problem filming?
Just for a couple of days. I mean, you know, it was not very pleasant, and we had all the permissions, and everything was kosher, and... And then, you know, 3 weeks into the filming, when we came to set, we were told that the local film commission had withdrawn its permission. And it took about a day to find out why they had withdrawn their permission to let us film in Sri Lanka, but we were told that we couldn't film. And it was pretty horrific. I mean, you know, I must say, and we found out that it was because of the Sri Lankan ambassador who was hauled into the office of the foreign minister in Tehran, and who said that how can you let a book written by Salman Rushdie be filmed in your country. And so he had a knee-jerk reaction, and he told the film commission, and the film commissioner put a halt to the shooting. But 3 days later, the president, who's pretty much, you know, has the last word in Sri Lanka on everything, came back to Colombo, and when he heard about this, he said, "This is nonsense. I'm not going to be bullied by anybody." So we were on again.
Yeah.
But I must say, I wasn't that. I felt that it would turn out okay. I remember when this happened during water, I had a terrible sinking feeling in my stomach,
mm-hmm.
that this is not going to end well. But I did not have that during when we were stopped. David Hamilton, on the other hand, was really worried, and he started thinking of maybe, you know, trying to shift the shoot to Durban or something.
Yeah. And has the movie screened in that part of the world? Has it premiered in India yet?
No, not as yet. It's been bought by a very good Indian distributor who we're very happy about. And I think that they're planning to distribute it in early next year.
In the end of the movie, there's a line that that says, the truth is less glorious than the dream. Mm-hmm. For you, at the end of making this movie, did it fulfill your expectations of how you imagined making the movie would be?
I think making any movie, whether it's this one or any other one, is very difficult. It's not easy. I mean, I don't understand it when people say they have an easy shoot. There's so much energy, time, commitment, focus, giving of oneself, you know, that goes into making any film, that it's not easy. But there was something definitely about this film that I felt at the end, you know, of the shoot, and even of the final, you know, the final edit, or the first time I saw it with an audience, yes, you know, like all journeys aren't perfect, but they're all fulfilling, and in some ways, they're all about love.
Mm-hmm. What's next for you?
I am supposed to do a film this summer, this coming summer, about Matisse in South of France. These are the last days of Matisse, the last few years, which is based on a wonderful script by Donald Martin and... So let's see how it all goes.
Yeah, it's been delightful talking again. Congratulations on this movie, and good luck with it.
Thank you so much, Joseph. Thank you.
The movie is called Midnight's Children. It opens nationwide on November 2nd. It's a really good movie. Do see it. Its director, Deepa Mehta, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.